Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, not Ben Golliver. Ben Golliver is sick, but I've got Jeremy Wu with me, live from Brooklyn, to discuss the draft.
What's up, man? I'm sitting here. There's a blizzard outside. I'm wearing my DeMar DeRozan jersey for Golliver. I'm ready.
Yeah, that's right. We're really fighting through the elements today because you were supposed to be in the office where we had like a studio set up and it was perfect. And now like the blizzard has thrown everything off. We've got a couple different recording devices in the mix, but I'm pumped. I want to talk draft. I want to talk about who we should be watching in this, in the tournament, obviously. And you are responsible for the big board at SI. I've been doing some mock drafts over the past few months. So I feel like this month is when like, everybody starts to pay attention to this, so I'm excited.
Yeah, definitely. This is when I think the hype starts to build up a little bit. And although, you know, there are some guys who are not in the tournament this year, which sucks. Overall, I think it's going to be a fun, definitely a fun month. And there are a lot of guys who actually can kind of change, I guess, their current, I don't want to say stock, but like, there's some room for movement, I think.
Yeah, it's weird because I feel like most years, sometimes people read too much into the tournament. But I think what's different with this class is that the top eight or nine are so close in terms of just talent level, upside. Like it's hard to choose. And I think the tournament is going to go a long way towards sort of like sorting through that web.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, every year I feel like we get the Justice Winslow, you know, who will just go off and have a strong tournament and maybe, you know, increase their draft position. Whether that's warranted or not is a different question, but someone every year seems to be that guy. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, who's going to make a deep run and which players will benefit from that. And I think it's a pretty, I know you said you haven't seen the bracket yet, but it's a pretty evenly distributed bracket, I think. So,
yeah, it's pretty embarrassing. I used to love March Madness and like go nuts for Selection Sunday. And I just have not really like gotten into it. But like beyond like draft prospects, I have the passion for college basketball, like just isn't there anymore. But let's go through the draft prospects here. Let's do you have your big board with you?
Yeah, I have it up. I have it up here. So we
have a mental big board.
No, I have this this note on my phone that I just have to like I'll be watching a game and I'll tweak it. And so, yeah, we have another big board coming this week, actually, that has not been released yet with an order that is mostly set. So we can just kind of roll off this note here.
All right. So we could start with. I mean, Fultz is your number one, right?
Yeah, Fultz is my number one. I think he's most people's number one. And even though he's not playing in this tournament and he's already gone pro, I think he's pretty safe up there for very warranted reasons. And I think even though we didn't talk about him that much, like I feel like he missed some of the media hype this season. I mean, just the fact that he's so uninteresting, like people have not said much about him as far as draft stock, I think says a lot. Like he is pretty, in most people's eyes, I think is a solid top choice.
Yeah, it's wild. Like I was talking to a scout at All-Star and like he just doesn't have a weakness. Like I think the defining Markelle Fultz trait is that he's just kind of good at everything. And I kind of like that he's been playing at UW all year because he's sort of like an urban legend among like basketball fans. Like maybe people have seen him play like one or two games. He hasn't really played any meaningful games. Like the whole season kind of felt like an exhibition. But he, to me, the longer I've looked at this draft, he's like so far and away the best prospect.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think his, you know, his size, you know, his playmaking, just, you know, and I think he can, you know, he can shoot. I think it's still a work in progress, but he, you know, he shot pretty well this year. And I think the other thing that stood out to me is I was like poking around on Synergy recently and he like finished in the top 10 in like pick and roll efficiency, despite the fact that his team was terrible and he had no one to pass to. Like to me, that said a lot, just like, you know, his ability to kind of, you know, create shots for others, even on a terrible team, even though they didn't win that many games. When you isolate it like that, I mean, it definitely pops out at you. And
Yeah, you can sort of watch him, like, whenever they needed a bucket, he could go and get it. His team was terrible, so that's not, like, crazy encouraging, but I don't know. I'm excited to watch him in the NBA. But we should get into, like, the meat of this is the guys that we're going to watch this month. So who do you have number two? Because I feel like number two is now sort of up for grabs.
Yeah, I agree. And so this is kind of because I was at the ACC tournament all last week. But right now I have Tatum at two, Jason Tatum from Duke, which was kind of something I didn't expect to see. But he really has played so much better in the last month and kind of, I think, answered some of the questions people had as far as, like, you know, his willingness to sort of share the ball and play in the system. I mean, he still takes some questionable shots, but I really, you know, I start coming into the season, I had him at two on our first big board, and he might be back there this week. I just haven't really impressed with what he's playing. I like him a little bit more than Jackson just because of his scoring ability. And, you know, I guess the other guy people are talking about it too is Lonzo Ball, which is a discussion we'll have to pack away for a minute. I like Tatum. I don't know how you feel about him.
Man, I'm really conflicted on Jason Tatum because I definitely see what other people see. Like, and over the last month, it seems like he's sort of hit another level in terms of what he's capable of and his ability to create in the half court and sort of generate his own offense, which, like, at the beginning of the year and even in the middle of the year, like, I watched Duke play Louisville, like, maybe halfway through the season, and Tatum just, like, couldn't, I mean, they didn't really have a point guard at that point, and Tatum was getting kind of, like, locked up in the half court. And that to me would be, like, his question mark is, like, he's very robotic on offense. And again, less so now, but, like, he's not, like, a crazy good athlete. He's just very polished. And I think, like, Tatum has the highest floor in the draft, but I would be worried about taking him number two in a draft where so many other people have kind of, like, flexible ceilings. Like, Josh Jackson could be amazing if he could put together a jumper. Like, Lonzo Ball, Lauri Markkanen, like, there are a couple people who I think could be better. So for me, I think my issue with Tatum is that he just feels like the safe pick.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, I don't think he'll necessarily go this high. But in a vacuum, I just kind of like sort of his profile. Like, it's something that we've seen before in a way. Like, there are guys, you know, who can, I don't know, in terms of comparisons, I don't love doing comparisons in general, but I mean, you can just kind of see him, you know, becoming a guy who can carry some offense for you. I guess the issue is, what is it going to be besides that? Yeah. And that's what, you know, I think I'm still figuring out.
Kevin O'Connor on The Ringer had a Danny Granger comp for him, which I think is actually pretty solid, because mm-hmm. Danny Granger was a lot better than people realized, and Tatum could be that good. Like, and it like, if he were peak Danny Granger, like, he's definitely a top three pick.
Yeah, that's a really good comparison. I hadn't seen that, but yeah, shout out Kevin. That's good. I like that a lot, actually.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, because I think like, if Duke makes a run, like, Tatum is the perfect example of a guy who could go from, like, that 5 to 8 range to suddenly he's in the mix at 2 or 3. And then maybe there will be a crowd of people saying, like, you got to take him number one.
Yeah, I mean, it could happen. I mean, there's definitely going to be somebody who's like, oh, they should be number one. That person is probably going to be Lonzo Ball, because that's, like, what the whole, you know, giant media narrative has been for the last, you know, couple months, I think, is, you know, hyping him up, especially on ESPN, you know, Bill Walton calling UCLA games and stuff. But Tatum, I think the thing with him is he's just been so good for them in the last week. I was really sort of blown away with the improvement from a couple months ago. You know, he's starting to make the right passes. I think they're using him sort of as a stretch four, which in college is, you know, fine. I don't know if he'll be that in the NBA, but he can, you know, work along the baseline. He can get his own shot. I mean, those things I think are going to translate to some degree. If he can create more separation, you know, we'll see. I mean, I think he might have a higher ceiling than people think.
Yeah, the stretch four thing is interesting. That's a good point, because like he could be sort of positionless in that respect, like on the right team. But you mentioned Lonzo Ball. So where do you stand on him? Because I feel like you and I have gone back and forth texting like over the last few months. Can't really decide how to feel. So where are you at this point?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm going to have him probably like 5 to 7 range. Most people have him top 5. I don't know if I think he's a top 5 pick. I've just been like trying to sift through sort of what TV is saying about him and what I'm seeing, you know, because there's two different things. And I mean, I'm concerned about his ability to create his own shot. I'm concerned about what's going to happen because, you know, I've watched a lot of UCLA games, and what happens is they'll get sometimes, you know, they'll get bogged down if the other team can figure out how to make it a half court game. And then he's like, you know, a little bit floating a little bit, you know, off the ball. You know, he can create his own shot a little bit, but it's mostly just like that step back. And he has that weird release to where, like, I think it's repeatable and I think, you know, he can make that shot. But with NBA defenders on him, it's going to be harder for him to get it off. So it's like, how does that translate? And if you can't score, you know, if you're a point guard, you can't really consistently score, then what are you going to be? Because how many elite point guards are we looking at in the NBA who can't get their own shot? None, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't want to, like, put words in your mouth or force you into too hot of a take, but you've already, like, mentioned TV and the narrative with Lonzo Ball. So, like, do you think he's just straight up overrated?
Yes, I do. I'll say it. Like, someone okay. has to say it. Just don't let LeVar Ball hear our podcast.
But. Yeah, like, how are you going to explain yourself to LeVar Ball?
Well, LeVar Ball could beat me in one-on-one, so.
No big baller brand discounts for you. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, man, to a degree. Like, I think Lonzo, he kind of reminds me of Ben Simmons last year, where, like, I look at his skill set and they're just like, it's a really interesting package of skills, and they, like, both of them are really smart players, and I'm really excited to see, like, how it I mean, we haven't even seen it with Simmons, but, like, I'll be really excited to see how it translates in the NBA. It's going to be a really interesting experiment. But if I were drafting in the top three, I would not feel super comfortable, like, investing in that gamble. And like that, like, you watched Lonzo against Arizona the other night, and the game for me that really was eye-opening was earlier in the year with him and De'Aaron Fox, where De'Aaron Fox kind of like shut him down a little bit. And that's not to say, like, one game in the middle of the year, like, is that determinative? But I just feel like the biggest issue with Ball is that we haven't really seen him against, like, great NBA caliber athletes. And the only times we've seen him do that, like, he struggled against Arizona in the first game they played too. And, like, we haven't really seen him excel in those settings.
Right. And I mean, nobody plays defense in the Pac-12 anyway, right? So that's a little bit hard to... Like, I think my big thing is it's hard to separate Lonzo from the team. And, like, part of that's because he is very good and he's a great college player. Like, I won't argue that at all. You know, I saw him play a little bit in high school, and, you know, their whole thing was, you know, 90-foot outlet passes and cherry picking. And, you know, that wasn't really, like, it was a very tough setting to, like, try to figure out what he was going to be. Right. So he's been great this year. I definitely have been impressed. And like, don't get me wrong. I want him to be really good in the NBA, because it'd be great for the league to have a guy who can do these things. Like, you know, if everything he could do right now just directly translated to the NBA court, I mean, that'd be awesome. Right. I mean, you know, he definitely could turn a team around like that. And I think the thing for me, and this is something I think we talked about last year with Simmons too, with Ben Simmons, is if you take him, you just got to make sure that you're, like, committing to playing his style. Like, you can't take Lonzo and like fit him into like a square peg. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to take 100%. Him and be like, run this slow ass team and, you know, play half court offense and walk the ball. Yeah. Like, you got to just commit to running, you know? So I think
I think that's the best point with him is that any whoever takes him is going to have to immediately start playing at 150 miles an hour. Because that's why it works at UCLA, and I think it can work in the pros. I also think, like, if you put Lonzo Ball off the ball and had him, like, if you were running a pick and roll, it, like, if let's say if you were the Lakers, I saw some Lakers fans talking about this last week. If you ran a pick and roll with D'Angelo Russell and then had Lonzo on the wing as like a kickout option, I think he could be pretty deadly. Working from there in the half court and using his vision and sort of slashing from there. So and like the one comparison that I heard early on that makes a ton of sense to me is like he's Ricky Rubio with a jump shot. And that, like, if that's not as crazy a prediction as some of the, like, he's the next Jason Kidd stuff, like, Ricky Rubio with a jump shot would be awesome and certainly worth, like, a top 10 pick.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and I was saying some of those same things, you know, back at the start of the season, too. Like, that was exactly, I think, the note that I was hitting was, like, yeah, you know, Rubio in the sense that he's, you know, pass first. And, you know, Rubio, everything he was doing in Spain didn't really translate over here either. And, you know, again, yeah. Like, I think he definitely would be, I think it's an interesting conversation. Like, I had an NBA guy, you know, say to me, too, like, you know, I think he can play some shooting guard. But I also don't know how much you really want to take the ball out of his hands. Like, you don't, you know, you're not drafting him as a shooting guard. I think that's a, you know, misconceived. Decision. You know, I think he can play some, and he's big enough to defend some twos. You can do different stuff with him, and I think that, you know, if you have a good plan, it's interesting. Like, I definitely think that he would benefit from, you know, if somebody drives and he catches it with 15 seconds left on the wing and can sort of has the defense already off balance. I think he can make those types of plays, sure. But is he going to be the guy who's going to bring it up and get a bucket when you need him to? I don't know. So it's tough. I mean, he's going to be the trickiest guy, I think, to peg, at least for me. For the next few months. I don't know. Like, I don't see any way around it.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be another one where, like, I could see UCLA making a wild run to the Final Four and him, like, the hype getting so crazy that, like, there's no way he goes beyond, like, the third pick or something. But, yeah, 5-8 for you. That's interesting. I like you staying strong because you've been kind of a skeptic for a while. I've sort of gone back and forth. And I won't make up my mind until probably like June. But yeah, there is definitely some, I think we're more cautious with Lonzo Ball than most people. What about Josh Jackson?
Yeah, you know, Jackson is a guy I've been impressed with in terms of how his shot has, I guess, improved over the course of the year. It doesn't look better, but it's going in more. I don't necessarily think he's all of a sudden a sniper, you know. He's not, I don't think he's ever going to be like an above average NBA shooter. He just does so many other things that, you know, I think he's a pretty safe choice. Like, I think his floor is fairly high in that sense. But if he never develops that jumper, then I don't know what type of offense he's gonna create. Like, I think his playmaking is a little bit overrated to me. Like, people are like, oh, he's a great passer. But most of those plays he makes are in transition, from what I have seen, which is cool. And that's a great skill to have. But I don't know. I think some people are acting
he's not Lonzo Ball.
Some people are acting like Josh Jackson is a point forward, and he's not.
I totally hear you on that.
Yeah.
But
he's a top five pick to me, for sure. I think he's pretty much locked in as a top five guy, just because of what he can do. But people also forget that he's a little bit older for his class. You know, he's been able to sort of use his size and strength to his advantage. Like, there are other factors to me where I don't think he's as great of a prospect as some people seem to think. Like, I don't know. I saw people talking about like T-Mac. Like, no, that's not what he is.
Nah, he's 100% not T-Mac. And I think a bigger Justice Winslow would be a really good player. But you have to be like sober about what Justice Winslow has been for the Heat when healthy. I don't think he's like Josh Jackson is not going to be Kawhi Leonard, right?
I don't think so. I mean, that'd be a great outcome for him. Maybe there's like a 1% chance that happens, but
yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I think it's probably healthy for everyone to assume that he's not going to get the jumper. The one thing that as he's hit more threes over the last like month or so, he's still like a 55% free throw shooter, which is not an encouraging sign. But as he's hit more jumpers, it is a preview of like how good he could be if the perimeter game became like fairly reliable or even like moderately reliable. He would be terrifying at the next level. But I think even without that, he's so big and does so many little things that he would be pretty helpful on a team. Like, so in the last mock draft, I had him going to Phoenix and like surrounded by guys who can shoot and guys who can score, he would be so much fun.
Totally. I think that's a good scenario for him. I mean, as long as he's not taken by a team where they're all of a sudden going to rely on him to be the number one option, like that's fine. Like, yeah. I think if you cultivate him as like a, you know, second or third option who does a lot for you off the ball, because I think his defense to me is his most interesting, you know, skill. Like in high school, I saw him like lock people up. Like when he wants to play defense, you know, he can really, really, really guard. And I think to me that is the most appealing skill for him, not anything he does on offense. Because we've seen guys with his athleticism who can get to the rim and who are strong. Like, to me, that's not like a something we haven't seen before. You know, his offensive skill set's not magical, right? But the overall package and the defense and, like, what he could be, I think is exciting. And, like, maybe like a very poor man Scottie Pippen, maybe? I don't know. Like, that type of thing.
Like, a nightmare scenario would be for him to head to a team like the Magic, let's say, where he was like suddenly thrust into the role as like the future.
Right. Exactly. But if he can go to a situation where there's not so much pressure, I like that for him. Like, I think he's a safe enough pick. But there's something still missing for me with him. I don't know. I think I'm pickier than a lot of people.
Yeah. And I feel bad. I feel like we're kind of nitpicking like a class of like pretty much everyone is awesome and particularly like fun to watch. Like that's Josh Jackson is so much fun, especially in college where he's like twice the size of everybody. It's fun to just watch him go to work. I want to talk about a guy who I have loved most of the year, Lauri Markkanen. I don't understand why he's not like firmly in the top five across the like draft internet. It seems like everyone has been like a little lower on him than I am. So, I mean, what do you see with him?
Yeah. I mean, I love his offensive upside. You know, his shooting is obviously a very positive outlier. Like we haven't seen very many 7-footers his age who have put up the type of production he has, you know, shooting from long range. You know, his best games are like eye popping. And you know, he's legit 7 feet. He's a pretty underrated athlete. I think the issue is just why isn't he a better rebounder? And then who is he going to guard in the NBA? Cause like, you know, I don't think he's unathletic and like, I think he, you know, should be able to, you know, do some switching and like, and whatnot, but he's not super quick on the defensive end. So it's like tough to peg. Cause we've seen guys, you know, worse prospects and better prospects than him sort of struggle who, you know, can't stay on the court, for defense. And so I think that's the issue is will his offense, you know, really be enough to make him, you know, a guy you can have out there for 35 minutes a night. Like, is he just your Ryan Anderson? Like, I don't know.
That's a good point. The defense, I feel like sometimes people overthink defense for guards and underthink defense for big guys. Like if a guard can't play defense, you look around the league, like probably 80% of guys in the NBA of like the best NBA guards can't play D and get by just fine. But if a big man can't play D, it's a little bit scarier. Because then you get into situations where like your whole defense sucks because you just can't switch and you have holes on the inside and it just is an issue. Like, I think that's sort of been what's happening to Cleveland right now. Is like, you look at them, they just don't have anybody on the defensive glass even. So now that you say that with Lowry, that makes some sense. I just look at a guy like that and see how, like, if he's like, he moves deceptively well. He could shoot off the dribble or off the catch, and it, just in like a pick and pop role, like, he could be so dangerous. And like, it's hard because you really don't want to throw out like the obvious Dirk comparisons. I think like a more realistic comparison would be like a version of Henry Ellenson from last year, except he's actually good at all of the things that Henry Ellenson like was supposed to be good at.
Yeah, I was way too high on that guy. Ugh.
Yeah, well, I think we all were. It was just sort of a bad draft, and we were like, well, this guy looks like he could maybe shoot threes, but like, Lowry Markkanen can definitely shoot threes. He kind of like destroyed UCLA all by himself on, I think it was Friday night.
Yeah, I watched that game.
So like, I don't know, man. I think that he definitely, as far as a floor is concerned, like, Fultz and Jason Tatum have very high floors, but I think Lowry Markkanen is right there in terms of someone who could like definitely be a useful rotation, like a useful Ryan Anderson, Channing Frye type. And there's a chance that that's sort of only scratching the surface, and he could be closer on the spectrum to like maybe a Dirk adjacent. Like, Dirk's one of the 25 best players of all time, so I'm not putting him in that class, but he's just, anybody who can shoot at that shoot that well at that size is going to be a real issue for teams.
Yeah, and like, look, I think I can totally see him being a guy who is sort of an empty stat line guy in a way, you know, where he'll score 15 points or whatever and get like only like 5 or 6 rebounds. But like, I think the way that he could sort of alter the geometry of your offense and open up the floor for other guys is also something you have to think about when you talk about how valuable he is. You know, if you need a shooter to space the floor, and, you know, again, shooting bigs are hard to find. I don't know if he's a 4 or a 5, and if he can't guard anyone, it might not matter. But like, you know, being able to have a fifth or fourth or fifth legitimate shooter on the floor is definitely something to consider. And I think this is stupid, but the dream scenario would be to send him to Dallas, where you have obviously Dirk, and then you have Nerlens Noel, who's now, you know, plus defensive center. That would be dope. I'd be so happy about that. I'd be geeked. But, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that could be fun. I would also like to see him in Portland, just running pick and pops with Damian Lillard for the next like 5 or 6 years. I don't know. I like, he's another guy who over the next few weeks could really sort of solidify himself in a different tier. Because Arizona's good, they've got like the path is there for them to make a little run here, and he could open some eyes. Moving on though, Who do you prefer between De'Aaron Fox and Malik Monk?
Okay, so I'm a Malik Monk guy, and I've been a Malik Monk guy for a few years since I saw him in high school. The two of them were actually playing together, or not together, but they were playing at the same tournament in Chicago at the Nike Global Challenge, and I think it was like 14 or 15. And I mean, Monk is just like, he does some stuff, man, like I've never seen anyone his age do in terms of making tough shots and making them look easy. You know, his worst shooting nights are better than most people's shooting nights in terms of, you know, the stuff he's able to do. And he's been a little bit streakier, I think, down the stretch. But I'm not so worried about that. I definitely buy what he is. And I think because he's such a good athlete, I think he has a chance to be even more than what, you know, some people are like, oh, Ben Gordon. But like, Ben Gordon was never half as athletic as Malik Monk is. So I think that gives him a ceiling that is a little bit higher than some of these other guys that you're going to hear him compared to, like Monte Ellis. You know, all those guys were similarly sized, you know, who were scoring first guys. But I really like Monk. I think he also can make plays off the dribble that we haven't really seen him do. And that's because he's playing with Fox. You know, Kentucky's not asking him to create very much. So I like Fox, too. I like Fox too, but his jump shot questions still give me some pause.
Well, let's start with Monk. because first of all, I don't think I can be friends with anybody who's not like pulling for Malik Monk to be awesome. Because his game when he goes off is so much fun that I think like any true basketball fan should want him to should be rooting for the Malik Monk takeover.
Absolutely.
That's number one. Number two, like I'm with you in terms of his skills for his age. Like even some of the ways he moves through traffic are just like so advanced. And I guess with Tatum, for instance, it feels like he has done like thousands of drills and is just finely tuned and polished in every way. Monk, a lot of it, he just is just like will naturally kind of weave through guys where you're like, what the hell just happened? And he can get to the rim. He can't quite finish at the rim as well as I think he'll be able to in the NBA, like once he adds a little bit of weight. What scares me with him, though, is like every now and then, and a lot of times it happens with Kentucky, and like maybe you blame Calipari for this or just the way they use him, but sometimes he'll just sort of disappear for entire halves. And you realize that like when he's not scoring, he's really not bringing much to the table.
Exactly. And I think that's the big question, because I think he's going to be able to score. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, what else can he do to help you?
So you're betting on Malik Monk scoring, and that's all that really matters.
Right. I mean, yeah, I want him to be so good. Like, I just think he'd be, you know, very incredible player to watch in the NBA. Like, and I think a lot of this stuff he does, it's like, just, he knows how to do it. It's like innate for him.
Yeah. So, I mean, he has moments where he's just like so dominant that you can imagine seven teams looking really, really dumb for passing on him. Like
exactly,
5 years from now.
Exactly. And you can see him. I mean, you can obviously see the downside too, where he, you know, is a guy who maybe, I mean, I think his floor is like a sixth or seventh man who, like, his floor is like a Lou Williams, right?
Yeah.
Which is not terrible. I think he could be a little better than that for sure as a floor. So I don't know. I like him more than Fox. I have Monk's like right out in my like four, five, six area. I've had him there for a while just cause I'm just going to bet in his talent. I think people have him lower. Some people have him lower than that, but I'd be shocked. He's not going to fall outside of the top 10. I don't think. Whereas Fox, like, he's so good at everything except shooting. And yeah, as a point guard, it's like, well, you know, that's the red flag that everyone, you know, wants to pick on now, but it's fair. I mean, I don't know. Fox could be
like, totally fair.
Yeah. He could be like Elfrid Payton, who is like a fine player, but has not really moved the needle for Orlando in the way that anyone hoped. You know, I don't know.
The draft like groupthink is kind of strange sometimes, because I've had kind of a soft spot for De'Aaron Fox like all year. And I think he will end up being kind of, I think Fultz is probably the best point guard prospect. Lonzo Ball is sort of an amorphous point guard. Like he's sort of plays a couple different positions, whatever. Like, but De'Aaron Fox is going to be really good in my opinion. And now all of a sudden he's rising from like a 11, 12 spot to like Draft Express had him in the fifth spot in their mock, their latest mock. And it seems like everyone's starting to get higher on him. Like the jumper is still a huge question mark though. And like, if I were a team drafting that high, I guess what I'm saying is I kind of liked De'Aaron Fox's ceiling. And De'Aaron Fox is like as a gamble at like 9, 10, or 11. But if I were drafting in the top five, I would not feel comfortable betting on the jumper.
Exactly. Yeah. And to me, there's just too much talent in this draft to put him that much higher than that.
That's kind of how I feel.
Right. Because like in last year's draft, he would have been, you know, probably 5, 6, 7, but now I think 8 through 11 is probably the range where I'd be comfortable looking at him.
Yeah.
But that's not to say that he's bad. Like he's a very
awesome
good prospect. Yeah.
Yeah. Like defensively alone, he's fantastic. And at a position where like, if you have a guy who can really bother point guards, like that's super valuable because there are great point guards everywhere in the NBA. So I understand that. And he's also so fast that the jumper isn't quite as important. Like, I think it's more, I would be more concerned drafting Dennis Smith with his sort of like janky three point numbers as opposed to De'Aaron Fox, because like De'Aaron Fox isn't really a scorer. So, and he's fast enough to get to the rim and distribute anyways, with or without a jumper. Whereas Dennis Smith is kind of like you're drafting a scorer playmaker guy who's going to be like the centerpiece of your offense. So it's scarier that he can't shoot. But it kind of caught me off guard that De'Aaron Fox is suddenly ranked above Malik Monk most places around the internet.
Yeah, no, for sure. I agree with that. Yeah.
We'll see. I don't know. We'll see what happens with Kentucky, because Kentucky's another team where like you have no idea what you're going to get on any given night. Like when Malik Monk goes off, they look like a Final Four contender. And then sometimes they are just sort of not there. Like even I watched them against Texas A&M and Malik Monk struggled, and they just kind of like sleepwalked their way to like a 10-point win, and just they never really looked engaged.
I think they're vulnerable in this tournament. Yeah. Not to get too deep into that, but like whoever they play between Dayton or Wichita State, I think is going to give them a game. And I mean, I hope we get Kentucky UCLA in the Sweet 16, because that'd be fun. But yeah, I'm not convinced that's happening. I don't know. I think UCLA is vulnerable too. So
yeah. All right, couple more here. Miles Bridges.
Yeah. Yeah, Bridges has been a guy that I don't love, but he's moved up on my board over the course of the season just because I've been less impressed with like the other guys who are, you know, just outside the lottery to me. Like, I think he could probably go as high as, you know, 12 or 13. To me, I originally had him lower, but you know, the more I sifted through these other guys and like with injuries, like, you know, Giles being not Giles, and, you know, OG Anunoby got hurt, and, you know, all these guys are kind of, I think after the top ladder group, it's very fluid. So Bridges is a guy who I think has very distinct strengths. He's a unique player. You know, he can shoot a little bit. He's very athletic, like high end athletic. You know, he's strong and tough, and he should be able to guard a few positions. So like, I've kind of tapped myself into him a little bit more just because he's played better. Mm-hmm. But I also just don't know. At the same time, he's a power forward who's built like a shooting guard. And how many guys like that have we seen succeed? Like, I don't know how that will necessarily translate. So I think he's a boom or bust guy.
Yeah, he's another guy that I'm pulling hard for to find a way to succeed, because I think it would be really fun to have him like in the mix over the next few years. Just like, he's so powerful. Like coming into the year, he was a fringe first round prospect though, right?
Yeah, I think he was more sort of towards the back, if I remember.
Like this his jumper has kind of come out of nowhere. Like I think everybody was talking about him as sort of like, yeah, like if he can learn to shoot, but he's actually been shooting fairly reliably this year at Michigan State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what has sort of changed my mind around him a little bit. Cause if he can shoot now, you're like, well, at least we can stick Miles in the corner. Like, his ball handling is not great. He can't really create his own shot that well.
Yeah.
But he's really athletic. He'll run the floor. He's, you know, he's good moving off the ball and like getting open from cuts. Like, he's not posting anyone up in the NBA. He's a weird player. He's only like 6'6", right?
Yeah.
But I mean, I think if you can just let him functionally be a floor spacer, then enough of what he brings in other areas of the court will make him, you know, a valuable rotation guy for someone. So I've actually sort of come around on him a little bit more than a lot of guys in the first round. I make up my mind early, I think, when I look at these guys sometimes, but that's one guy who I think has justified some upward movement.
It's tough. Like, you don't want to make the Draymond comparisons. And I feel like we do this every year with a different Michigan State player, but he does have, like, first of all, Draymond was like recruiting him and from the finals like a couple years ago. But he also has that kind of like crazy strength to where you think like maybe he could be a fun like small ball four, maybe play some five at some point. Like, I know he's only 6'6", and this is probably insane, but he's just a really interesting sort of ball of clay at this point.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And like, speaking of balls of clay, like, can we just talk about Justin Patton for a little bit? Because he's the guy who I have been kind of, nobody's really talking about as a top 10 pick, but to me, he's like absolutely a top 10 pick based on all his right. potential.
Explain Justin Patton to me. I've watched Creighton, like, I've watched maybe 75% of one Creighton game this year. So I need help.
When in the year was that game?
It was like a week ago.
Okay, so basically there's been two Pattons because, you know, they had Mo Watson who got hurt and then has had off-court trouble, so he's not with the team anymore. But, you know, when Patton was playing with Watson, who was their point guard, you know, that they were a very well-oiled machine. And he was like, man, he looked amazing. Like, he's had some really, really high points this year. And, you know, obviously, you know, the production has tailed off a little bit since then. But I think I've just seen enough in terms of what he can do that I'm like super, super intrigued. Like, he moves so well at his size. And he's, you know, I think he's a good shot blocker. He's an improving rebounder. His rebounding, I think, is something people are going to nitpick, but he needs to add strength. But he's legit 7 feet, and he can shoot. He's a really good passer. I just think like he has so much untapped potential, and there's so few good bigs in this draft that I like don't get why no one can like is like looking through the numbers here and like looking at what he is. Because like, to me, you know, I had him last big board at 5, probably a little too high. I was sort of trying to make a point like, guys, look, this guy is a top 10 pick. But to me, he's 100% a top 10 pick, or he's a steal if he somehow falls out of there just because of his potential. Like, I think he's the guy who no one's talking about. And I think like when you talk about, as much as I hate this whole unicorn thing, like if you look at guys who could be a unicorn, well, here's a 7-footer who can really move, who can shoot, who has like a lot of untapped potential. And I think the other thing is he hasn't really even been coached up into his role that much. He kind of floats around out there a little bit, and you know, the team is a little bit of a mess right now, but I think he's coming out. And I think if he does come out, I just watch. He's going to creep up people's boards once he starts working out for people.
Okay.
I think he's a guy who people are sleeping on.
That's fair. I need to watch more. I watched, I lied. It wasn't really 75%. I tried to watch Creighton versus Villanova, and Villanova was up pretty big. And, I was just like, you know what? I don't have the energy to like watch this blowout to see how many glimpses of Justin Patton I can get. Here's my, like, in the abstract, as I think through this and I've done this with the mocks, like, my issue with Justin Patton is that a center is not that valuable unless they are in that like unicorn crazy value, crazy territory, like where you're just like, what the hell is happening? This guy is good at everything. Like, for the most part, the rest of the guys in this class, like Bam Adebayo, who are some of the other centers?
I mean, you got like Robert Williams. I mean, to me, it's like no question Patton over Robert Williams. And then Harry Giles, who knows?
Yeah.
Ivan Rabb has been kind of falling on people's boards. I still think he's solid, but there's not a lot of centers.
Yeah. There's like an underwhelming glut of like pretty good prospects who are not going to be like stars. And you start to see like, just like the value of that position isn't what it used to be. Like, I think even if you went 10 years ago, Justin Patton would have already floated into the like top 6 or 7 in this draft, just because of the way teams used to value it. Now, I think people will need to be convinced of what he can be. I kind of like his story. Like, he came out of nowhere for Creighton. Like, what, I didn't even know that players could redshirt, like basketball players could ever redshirt, but he sat out his freshman year and is now kind of awesome. I mean, I'll take your word for it. You've been selling me on Justin Patton for a couple months. I also was at a game with a scout like 2.5 months ago, and we were talking through draft people, and he was like, you know who you need to watch is Justin Patton. So like, the buzz is definitely out there.
Yeah, and it's very low key buzz, and you know, I think just watch. I just think you're going to see him moving up all of the other boards over the next month or two. And Creighton's probably, they might not even win a game in this tournament, but I just think once he starts working out and once people like realize how good he is, to me, yeah, that's a no-brainer, just based on the untapped potential there. So yeah, that's my spiel.
I appreciate it. We'll see what happens. People we missed. A couple more, actually. So just Jonathan Isaac, where are you on him?
Yeah, I feel like every time I watch him, he's been underwhelming. Okay. And I get why he's a good prospect. He gives me like Harrison Barnes vibes in terms of like what he's going to be in the NBA. Obviously, he's 7 feet and like he's a good shot blocker. So I think you're looking at him ideally as a power forward, but he's just so thin. Then you're also like having the Brandon Ingram conversation about like, you know, what is he going to put on muscle? To me, Ingram is like head and shoulders better than Isaac as a prospect. Ingram is like, I don't know how the age is different, but you know, I remember Ingram was so young last year that they're probably very close in age. I don't remember.
Quick aside, are you still a Brandon Ingram believer? Because I very much am. No, I am. I think it's bullshit. People have been smearing him.
Dude, people are tripping about the Lakers because an 18-year-old kid hasn't figured out the NBA yet. Like, chill. Like, he's good. Like,
also, you know? You've got half of, like, Celtics Nation is talking about Jaylen Brown like every single day and how good he's going to be, blah, blah, blah. I'm with you. I think Jaylen Brown's going to be real solid for them. But Brandon Ingram is putting up pretty much identical numbers in LA. And granted, like, the Lakers are getting their ass kicked every night, but I don't understand why we're just not counting what Brandon Ingram's doing.
Yeah, no, I think the leap from him is coming. I will be the first to tell Golliver when it starts happening.
For real. We were early on the Brandon Ingram bandwagon and I'm not getting off. So yeah, I'm with you. I think Isaac is not in that mix. I think I was actually higher on him earlier in the year because I came in with such low expectations. Mm-hmm. Like normally you hear about like a 7-footer who can shoot. And normally like you watch them and they kind of just suck and have no idea how to play basketball. And Jonathan Isaac is not that. Like, he plays hard. He moves pretty well. And you can see him as like a solid small forward at some point, but I agree that he's not there now. And he's also not fluid enough to where you, like, I can't really see him as a superstar. Right. I can see him maybe making like an all-star, like a couple all-star teams, but not really in that, like, he's never going to be your first option.
Yeah. And I think there's like a crowd of people who are like, well, look how efficient he is. Well, it's like, think about his role too. Like, I think,
yeah,
it, you know, it actually goes in his favor. I think the role he's playing right now for Florida State is sort of like analogous to what he'll do in the NBA. Like, he'll be a guy who catches and shoots and like does some stuff for you, but it's very predicated on him getting, you know, bigger and tougher. I'm just not as high on him as other people, just because every time I see him, he just doesn't wow me. I have yet to see a game where I'm like, damn, that guy is good, you know. And like, sometimes you just gotta have that. But I mean, I'd like him to be good. I don't know. I'm a little bit lower on him.
Hey, listen, man, we're rooting for everybody. Yeah. We want everybody to be good.
Exactly.
All right. Let me give you two names outside the lottery who I really like. First is Justin Jackson, who I guess I just saw on Draft Express is now starting to like become a lottery pick. Which I'm curious is to see. I'm curious of hear how you feel about that one.
Yeah.
But like, Justin Jackson to me, he's kind of giving off some like Otto Porter vibes, where like if I were Justin Jackson's agent leading up to the draft, I would just be showing them film of Otto Porter and being like, look, this is a version who's $100 million cheaper. And just because he's kind of big and just like a difficult guy to deal with. And if he can actually hit threes, like, he will be a really solid starter for someone. What do you think?
Yeah. So it's interesting because last year, you know, he tested the waters and he was a mess and he was not a good 3-point shooter and teams are like, you got to go back. Right. So I've been trying to like separate that from, you know, his performance this season. I've come around to him as a first round pick, but to me, lottery is pushing it.
I agree. I think that might be a little high.
I think 20 to 30 is fine because, you know, that's the area where it's just more based on need. And I think there are a lot of good 20 to 30 type players. I mean, I could see him leaping higher just because, again, like, I think the outside lottery from like 14 to like 20 or 19, those guys are kind of underwhelming to where I think it's going to end up being fluid too. And you'll see some like Euro guys get stashed in that range. Cause like when you don't know what to do, You can just take someone who no one's heard of and be like, oh, he's good. We'll just hide him. And Gershon Nwabisele, you know, I like Jackson and, you know, I saw him play in the ACC tournament and he didn't have a great game against Duke.
A rough night against the Blue Devils.
Right. But I feel like we know what he can do, and what he can do is, you know, he's an NBA supplementary scorer. I don't know if he's even more than that.
Yeah, he's not an amazing athlete, but I also think that when you're that big and that long, you're just going to be a pain in the ass for teams to handle. I know from watching Otto Porter, like being that lanky and awkward can sometimes work to your advantage because you just have these sort of unconventional moves where defense, it's like you're a human knuckleball. And it's tough for teams to adjust to that. What do you think of Donovan Mitchell?
Yeah, he's a guy who I do not see as a first round pick. Just because I think he's too small to be a shooting guard. He's not really a point guard and he's sort of a tweener. And it's the same problem as Malik Monk, except Mitchell's like even streakier than Monk and he's not as good of an athlete and he's done less to convince me that he's like a true NBA prospect. So, I mean, I think he will get drafted if he comes out. It wouldn't hurt him to go back to school. I think if he goes and has a good year and comes back next year, he's a first round pick. To me, he's just outside. I don't really see the hype.
Wow. You really burst my Donovan Mitchell bubble.
Is he your guy?
Well, a little bit. I kind of like him as sort of a like weirdly useful combo guard who's he's not great at anything, but is good at just about everything and will like play hard.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm thinking of like a junior Malcolm Brogdon.
Sure. Yeah. Or like a worse Avery Bradley or something.
Yeah. But look, I have only watched like two Louisville games and may have caught just like better Louisville performances. Yeah.
I mean, his good games have been really good for sure. So I don't know. It's like I want to see more from him. And even if he gets 40 a game in the tournament, I won't be like, oh, my God, this guy's a first round pick.
OK,
if he gets 40 a game in the tournament, maybe I'll say that.
I think he's a first round pick regardless. But I think the tournament could certainly inflate his stock to a really irrational point.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll I'd rather have like a Luke Kennard, man, because I think that guy is just so solid. Like someone like that, I think I'd rather take.
Who are your favorites beyond like our top 15? Is Luke Kennard one of them?
Luke Kennard is one of them. I just think he's been so impressive this year. And I guess the issue is like, is he going to be able to really create his own shot? But even if he's not, I mean, he's a very good ball handler. He's a good passer. He's going to knock down open shots. He's he's a good shooter, lefty. Like I just like everything he brings to the court. And I think he's tough. And he's the kind of guy who like you want in a rotation and who's going to be like sneaky good. And it's going to be like, what? Like, why is this guy good? It's like Joe Ingles syndrome.
Yeah, whoever drafts him, if someone can get him in like the 20s, that's a guy you're fired up to have.
Like put him on San Antonio and see what happens. Like that'd be dope.
Yeah. Yeah. He's definitely going to be solid wherever he goes. And as opposed to drafting, like you mentioned some like random European, some like project who's almost certainly not going to be good. Like Luke Kennard is going to help a team. That's a real victory second half of the draft.
Yeah, he's one of the guys who I like in that range. I mean, there's still a lot that's going to change between, you know, 20 and 40, but there's a lot of good players nestled in that range.
Okay, who else?
Let's see. I mean, I've come around on Swan again also.
I'm really excited to watch Purdue in this tournament.
Yeah, and if we're having the conversation about like, oh, Draymond Green, well, like that's the guy who I'm thinking of this year.
Okay.
Who might be a little bit undervalued. He's not a great athlete, and I guess that's what's gonna hold him back. You kind of know what he is, but like I mean, he's probably at least a better Big Baby Davis. You know, he can shoot. He's tough. Like, I think he's definitely committed to staying in shape. Like, if there's anything, you know, you've read all these great stories about him, and he's got an incredible story. I just think he's going to have success. Like, it might not be like all-star success, but I think you can look at him and, for example, look at him versus like a Jared Sullinger, and I think you could see him being better than that.
Yeah, that's actually a good way to explain it with him. And Sully went I think he went like 22nd or 23rd of the draft. Mm-hmm. That seems like a decent range for Swanigan.
Yeah, I just think he's going to produce in some way. Like, I came into the season and I was skeptical, but then I realized he had lost all that weight. Like, I hadn't even seen him play since high school, really. I had been that paying attention to him, and I've been very impressed. So he's another guy who I think is pretty good.
What about guys you love, the Northwestern Wildcats? Oh my God. How are you feeling?
Man, it's crazy. I don't know if we're going to beat Vandy. I think we could. But I mean, I don't know, like for people who don't know, like I was, you know, I covered the Northwestern beat a little bit in college, and, I was halfway through school when the new coaching staff came in, and, you know, I was also covering like Chicago recruiting. So I was kind of there from the ground floor watching it as it happened. So it's pretty cool. It's a great moment for them. There's a lot of good people sort of in that program. So I have nothing bad to say. I'm very, very excited for them.
Good.
Yeah.
I figured we would wait 55 minutes to dive into like what you really care about this week. I don't really have many Northwestern takes, except that I'm super happy for you because you're one of the only like diehard Northwestern. You were a Northwestern basketball fan before like every other Northwestern alum in sports like hopped on the bandwagon this year. Like you were there digging in the crates a couple years ago.
Way back when.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. I'm excited for them. Like, I don't know. I mean, it'd be dope if they played Gonzaga, and Gonzaga has too many bigs. Like they're not going to win that game, but you know, it's going to be cool no matter what. I just hope they don't have like a 30-point blowout and then go home and like turn tail. That would be bad. And it could happen.
Yeah. You know, you're basically playing with house money as long as you don't get like totally run off the floor in a couple days.
Yeah, but they'll be prepared.
Who do you have in the Final Four?
All right, so I got Villanova over Duke in the East, which is like something I'm flipping back and forth on. I have Arizona in the West. I think they're really good. They've been playing great. Not super impressed with Gonzaga in the West. I have Louisville coming out of the Midwest because I don't believe in Kansas this year. And I would have maybe had Oregon before Boucher got hurt. And then I have Carolina coming out of the South, because I think just the UCLA Kentucky area of the bracket is death, and Carolina, you know, I saw they look great last week, and I have them winning it all over Arizona.
All right. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. I know you'd like that. I don't know. So I always kind of like,
my confession is that I am not really like, as has been alluded to several times in this podcast, I'm not super invested in college hoops anymore. But I'm excited to get back into Carolina for the next couple weeks. Joel Berry, it has been awesome. The one thing, so were you at the Duke game Saturday?
I lucked out. I had a friend call me 20 minutes before the game, like, yo, I got a ticket. And I like busted my ass from our office in Manhattan to get to Barclays and made it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. I was pretty freaked out watching Roy Williams sit Joel Berry for like most of the second half as Duke just turned it on.
Yeah.
It was like PTSD from every like frustrating Roy Williams game over the last like 10 years of my life.
Yeah.
And perfect preparation for March.
Yeah. I was going to say when Berry, because was he in foul trouble or did he just get benched?
He was in foul trouble. Okay, he had four fouls.
So yeah. So when he went to the bench, that was when the game changed. Clearly that was when the game changed. So, I mean, Duke's guards are really good. But
the upside though, is that for every Roy title, the Heels have lost in the semifinals of the ACC tournament in some like bullshit performance. I think they lost to Florida State in 2009. I forget who it was, the other year, but anyways, that bodes well. I feel good about it. But thank you for convening here on short notice to talk through these guys. I'm excited. We'll do a couple more draft podcasts as things get closer.
Of course.
And yeah, because it really is kind of wide open for whether it's Jason Tatum or Josh Jackson or Lowry or Lonzo.
And, like, and we didn't even talk about Dennis Smith, who I think is probably might be in that mix too. So
I know. Yeah. I'm actually really bummed that Dennis Smith is not going to be in the tournament, because it would have been nice to have a couple more games against like good teams to sort of evaluate with him.
Right, right.
But that's why you don't go to NC State, everyone. but yes, so we will be back. I'll be back with Golliver on Friday with another mailbag. And everyone enjoy the tournament. Here we go.
Yeah, get well soon, Ben.
Take it. Yeah, get well soon, Golliver.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.